Is it just me, or does this dude look like an ass with wings? I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for episode number 90 goddamn 9 of Video Games.
The two nines.
Yeah. Guys, did you ever think we would make it to 99 episodes of such a ridiculous
podcast? Wait, this isn't
podcast?
The 100th episode? Didn't we start at episode 0?
Yeah, but that means this is the 98th episode.
No, if we started at episode 0, this would be the 100th episode.
If we started at episode 2, this would be the 98th episode.
Kevin, why are you such a bad programmer? I think I understand now. I think I understand why every piece of code that you write makes all of our player characters' statistics off by 10 orders of magnitude. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
It's all right.
Kevin's back in Chicago where it's cold and rainy and lonely.
Oh my God, today I have a bit of a story from this morning. So I went to bed. I was working on KOL until 3 a.m. And then went to sleep. And Melissa had to get a flight, a 7:45 a.m. flight. So she got up at like 5:30. And then she like sort of shakes me awake at 6 and she said, "Kevin, the cab isn't here. I need you to drive me to the airport." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I like crawl out of bed and get in the car, and airport, especially at like 6 in the morning, should be like a 25-minute drive. But it is raining like fucking cats and dogs, and it takes an hour and 25 minutes to get to the airport. We go on the highway, which is a bad idea. There are 4 separate accidents slowing down traffic on the highway on the way there. I like her to cap things off, her phone, which had been on the charger all night, had 1% charge this morning and just would not start up, even though we charged it for the whole like hour long car ride from the cigarette lighter. So her phone was dead. So like, it was just this like super nightmare thing where she had to go there, and she was like, we're just totally expecting that she was going to get to the airport and then have to get on a later flight. So she's going to be stuck in the airport for 8 hours or whatever. Dropped her off. She managed to get on the flight because it was raining so hard, her flight actually was like stealth delayed. So,
well, how do you know she got on the flight if she wasn't able to send you a text message saying
she paid $7 on the plane to get wireless so that she could email me from her iPad.
Wow.
Yeah. And then on the way home, the rain got even worse. And like the highway, I was driving through like, I don't know, six inch deep puddles on the highway, like Highway 90. And there were places on the highway where there were like sewer grates, like manhole cover things, where water was shooting up out of the ground, like 6 or 8 feet, like just a spigot, like just shooting straight up into the air because there was so much like water pressure in the sewer system or whatever. It was nuts.
Was there like a manhole cover on top of the water spout? And could you jump from manhole cover to manhole cover, traversing the city and maybe hitting ninjas with things?
I did not. I should have thought of that. That would have made my ride home much, much more enjoyable. Yeah.
Well, no, that was, sucks that you're nuts. So much better of a boyfriend than I am. Emily has a flight at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, and I was like, you know what? You're taking a cab.
Melissa was going to too, but the cab didn't show up.
Like, I have a feeling that if Emily wakes me up at 4:45 and says the cab's not here, I will say it'll show up and fall back asleep, and that'll be the end of it.
Huh? Okay. All right.
Oh well, cab's not here, huh? Guess you're not going anywhere. That's the other answer.
Yeah, that was today's adventure in Rainland.
Or I think there's a skateboard in the garage. that'd be radical to skateboard to the airport.
Yeah.
You can just take the skateboard with you on the plane.
You could just check the skateboard. You'd be all set.
So what else is going on, Kevin?
Not much. I've been working almost nonstop. I guess I had a lovely visit from my uncle who lives in Indianapolis. He and his partner were flying to New Zealand, so they're flying from O'Hare and stayed the night the day before in Chicago. So we went out for dinner and drinks. So I took them to Ada Street and then Violet Hour afterwards.
Wow. You're really rolling out the red carpet.
Yeah, it was great.
Are they fancy lads? Are they accustomed to the fancy life?
Yes, I mean, I think like they're both retired, and they enjoy, you know, drinking and fine foods and that kind of thing. So it was fine. They were definitely pleased with the choices.
Yeah, both of those places are pretty good. Yeah. In my experience, yeah. My limited experience, having been to each of them once.
It's just nice being somewhere where those places are like 10 minutes away. I like that sort of convenience aspect. Chicago's a pretty good city. You know, I'm not sad that I'll be leaving here in a couple months, but I'm glad that I had a chance to learn more about it.
What have you been up to, Riff?
Not much.
You went to a museum?
Yeah, I went to the Phoenix Art Museum. Yesterday, the interior design class that Jenny is taking, she had an assignment to go look at an exhibit of tiny rooms.
Oh, yeah?
I guess there is this artist whose name I did not make a note of, unfortunately.
Was it Barbie?
Well, apparently this lady collected like tiny furniture and dollhouse artifacts for a long time, and then eventually had acquired so much that it occurred to her to start furnishing like tiny rooms, making these little dioramas. But and they were pretty cool. The only notable thing I have to report about it was that apparently, because initially she was collecting these objects without any thought about using them in rooms, so originally scale wasn't really a factor in her collection, and so consequently one of these rooms has on a coffee table a pack of Lucky Strikes that, judging by the size of the magazines that are also on the table, this pack of Lucky Strikes is about 8 inches by 10 inches.
Ooh.
Yeah.
God, that'd be so good. Did you ever smoke Lucky Strikes?
No.
They're hard. That's rough, man. It's like straight Camels.
Ugh.
Like, they made, I think, some filtered Lucky Strikes at some point, but generally, like, yeah, unfiltered cigarettes in the sort of modern cigarette idiom, that shit will like double kill you. Like normal cigarettes, not good, but man, it's rough. You saw like a grizzled old black dude smoking some Camel Straights. You were like, that guy is gonna be dead like super, super soon. That's my one experience meeting a guy who regularly smoked Camel Straights.
Will they be dead or will they be double dead?
I think probably double dead. Grizzled old black dude is the only person who can handle that shit. And how did you even get there? Like, if I saw, like, a young black dude, I would be like, that guy cannot handle Camel Straights. He must have switched to that late in life, because he's like, what the fuck? It's like Alan Arkin in Little Miss Sunshine taking up heroin when he's already about to die. It's like, oh, okay, I guess it's time to start smoking filterless cigarettes. I mean, imagine a cigarette that's, like, 10 inches long.
Yeah.
Not like a Benson and Hedges extra sissy or whatever.
And not just 10 inches long, but I imagine there's still only 20 cigarettes in that pack, so they'd have to have been like...
Right, he's big around as a half dollar.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So it's like bigger than a cigar, but it smokes super, super fast because it's still got all the formaldehyde and shit in it. Man, that's awful.
Mm.
That's like when that one hippie you know is like, hey, check it out. I rolled a joint the size of a tampon. Let's smoke this and then die.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, hippie, you're the boss, I guess.
Yeah. Don't want that guy as your boss. Yeah.
The one time that happened, he then made me, set up Cthuga. Which was...
Oh, I remember Cthulhu.
You remember Cthulhu?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cthulhu was
thing.
Great.
This was a thing that if you were high as shit in 1994, you might put on your computer and then run a cable from maybe the headphone jack on your Sony stereo into the microphone jack on your Sound Blaster in the back of your Packard Bell 486-25. And yeah, play some set. Cthulhu was like...
It's like a visualization program.
Yeah. That would make creepy, trippy visuals. and
based on the waveform,
yeah, based on
of
the music,
yeah,
that was coming in, yeah. Which is you describe that now, and it's like, oh, you mean like Winamp did 10 years ago?
Yeah,
yeah, but like, this was 19 years ago.
they have a bunch of those on iTunes too, and just I've never seen one that I felt was as interesting as Cthulhu.
Well, you never forget your first.
I guess that's
also
true.
You are way less high than you were in 1994. Typically, I know you've been complaining about not being able to find acid, which, given that I didn't know you in 1994, you weren't doing, at least where I could hear you. Kevin, what can't you find that was easy to get in 1994?
Twinkies.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think that those are actually hard to find. At no point was the supply... I don't think that that's actually true, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I don't think so.
I haven't seen any Hostess stuff on sale anywhere since that happened.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure that Hostess didn't go out of business entirely. Would you... Okay, so 6 months before the internet said they were going to stop selling Twinkies, had you seen any Hostess stuff? Just say no, Riff. Come on.
No.
Yeah, see? My point exactly.
Oh, wait. Last week... let's see here.
Are you looking at E-Trade's history of Twinkies futures?
Yes.
Are you looking on eBay to see if you can get a box?
Hostess was acquired.
Oh.
Okay. And somebody bought it and is attempting to maintain it.
I don't think that they ever actually stopped making Twinkies.
You don't think so?
I mean, I don't know. I never liked Twinkies, so I... Wouldn't have noticed. I was more of a fruit pie kind of guy.
Yeah, I definitely
like
the fruit
pies. But not the
kind
that they
pies.
Had anywhere. I liked peach mm-hmm. and blackberry.
Yeah.
And that was it. And if you were lucky, a given convenience store would maybe have one of those two pies. And then you bought it, and then they wouldn't have any more for like 2 weeks.
Twinkies are not in production currently and have not been for like 6 months.
Hmm. Well, color me wrong.
What color is that? Sort of a burnt umber.
Just any color that I'm not.
Okay. So like a burnt umber.
Polite.
Well, it depends on what the color of my numbers for Zach's page is, right? Like, if he's like, you know.
Is that how a color by numbers work? You just, based on the page number, you just paint the entire page one color.
Yeah, I never understood those color by number books.
Yeah, it did seem kind of weird. Well, cool.
What have you been up to, Zach?
Nothing really. Like I was trying to think if there's anything that I've done since the last episode that we recorded that didn't have anything to do with video games, but not really. I've been working, okay. Which is video games. Oh, I went to an Evil Dead marathon.
Huh.
Did they show
the new one?
No, okay. They didn't. We drove down to Tucson. Yeah. A lot of my teeth were knocked out in the process of that drive. Why I can't say where we went. We drove down to Tucson and saw Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. And there were two things. Two different things that made me realize that I am an old-ass man. One is that about a third of the way through Army of Darkness, I started more or less being asleep. I did not ever actually fall asleep, but I was just sitting there. Like, also, the theater sold beer, so... I might have just been drunk. Sometimes I confuse really, really drunk with almost asleep. Sometimes those two things are actually very similar character. The other thing is that I ordered a bag of potato chips with my dinner and then was unable to open the bag of potato chips without Emily's help because I'm too old for a bag of potato chips at this point.
This newfangled potato chip technology.
I've talked about this on a bunch of podcasts already, but I don't know if any of them have been published, and I don't actually remember whether the thing that I just said is true or not. But so when you get a little bag, like an individual serving bag of potato chips, mm-hmm. how do you open it?
You grip the sides and...
And then you pull it apart at the seam and you open the entire top.
Sure.
This bag was fucking welded shut on that axis. And it was, you might as well have been trying to just like snap a quarter in half with your fingers to pull this thing apart. And
but
I pulled and pulled and pulled.
You, at all times.
Right? Well, I know, but so then Emily grabbed the thing out of my hand, ripped it on the little, there's a little indentation in the beginning. There's like a notch cut out of it.
Notch, yeah.
Just ripped the corner off. And I looked at it and I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this, Emily? This is not how you eat fucking potato chips. Well, so
you,
I tried to...
You crush them up in the bag and pour them in your
mouth.
Oh,
right, right. Just dump them in my beer. Might as well for all the good they're going to do me that way. The hole wasn't even big enough for the biggest chip inside the bag to get out of. So I tried to split the seam along the top from that hole. Still no dice. Still no dice. So I had to pull the scissors out of my pocket and cut across the top, which she then made fun of me about. And that's when I realized that it is time for me. Like, my next bag of chips should just be a fucking coffin because I am too old for a bag of chips.
The next bag of chips will be your ration on the ice floe that you're sitting on waiting to die.
Oh, you know what? I could have made short work of that chips bag with a shit knife.
How do you sharpen the shit knife? Do you sharpen it before it freezes?
Or like, no, you sort of as it freezes.
You sort of have to, like, lean in one direction while you're shitting, and then it kind of comes. I mean, it's the same way you sharpen turds now.
Well, okay, so then are you in danger of lacerating yourself while shitting?
Well, no more so than you normally are when you shit.
I imagine if you are shitting knives, that you are more in danger than normal, unless you are eating knives, in which case, more power to you.
I don't think that, I like, maybe if you could swallow, like, a G.I. Joe knife and shit it out whole, but I think any actual functional knife that you ate...
I feel like anything pointy, even a G.I. Joe knife, would probably perforate you and mess you up.
I think, like, a little plastic. I mean, like, I've eaten, you know, radishes that were basically shaped and sized like G.I. Joe knives. Huh.
Are you sure that all the G.I. Joe knives you had were not actually just radishes?
Well, yeah, they're like bulbous and sort of red, and they're kind of spicy.
Oh, no, okay, yeah, that's G.I. Joe knives. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Have you guys been playing any video games?
Played pretty much the only game I played other than the assignment was Bioshock Infinite, finally.
Oh, yeah. We can't talk about it because Kevin hasn't played it or any other video game in the last 100
years.
Well,
we just can't spoil it.
Yeah.
I would not... I feel like this is too early in the life of the game to be spoiling it on this show anyway.
You can't talk about it without spoiling it, though.
Well, we can't talk about the end without spoiling it, definitely. God, I thought it was awesome, though.
It turns out...
Super great.
Columbia is someone's butt. That's the spoiler at the end.
Yeah,
Oh, no wonder. It was like
Columbia is actually the
it just all comes together
two big
now.
White hairy mountains. And I was like, why would somebody build a city like this? But they didn't. It was just a giant's butt.
Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty much Bioshock Infinite in a nutshell. Huh. What did you think? There was a lot of shooting dudes, but you enjoyed the shooting dudes.
I enjoyed the shooting dudes, yeah.
So everybody that I've talked to about this game, like every... I haven't talked to a lot of people about this game, to be fair, but everybody that I've talked to about this game had basically the same experience I did, which was like, started playing it, you're like, oh, this rules. Oh, this is... Look at that guy. Yeah, check out this thing. Oh, man. Are those guys fucking singing a Beach Boys song? That is the best thing I've ever seen. And then, oh, by the way, here's a gun. Now shoot 400 dudes in the head. And then I just, like, deflated completely when I realized, oh, right, this is a just fucking shooting dudes in the head game.
Well...
You didn't feel that way?
Nah, I mean, there is a lot of shooting
dudes
in the head.
It's okay for you to not feel that way, Rick.
No.
if you get even more of an erection from shooting dudes than you do from hearing a calliope version of a Cyndi Lauper song, then that's okay. It takes all kinds.
I did really enjoy hearing in the bar a 1910 version of Tainted Love. That was super good.
That one I did not discover until I went on a YouTube binge of all the anachronistic music.
Mm.
I guess it is not a spoiler, because it happens so early, it is not a spoiler that this game involves the ability to open portals into different times and spaces. Yeah. And it is not really a spoiler to say that there is a character in the game who is a composer who just basically all of his compositions are songs that he has heard the 80s.
And revised and 90s, as appropriate to the time. Yeah.
Revised to period appropriate. Like the Barbershop Quartet version of God Only Knows, like, is...
I feel like I totally didn't notice that. I feel like I probably missed out a lot of that just by not being familiar very much with 80s and 90s pop music.
This is not necessarily going to be a defensible statement, but I almost feel like the Beach Boys were basically our version of that guy. In the sense that, so the Beach Boys, more so the Beatles, less so various other musicians, a single song at a time. Like, I have this sense in my head that there are things that were not composed so much as discovered, because they are just so... You hear the song and you're just like, fucking, of course that is a song. Why did I not realize before I heard this song that that was one of the sequences of sound that the universe was designed to produce? And the Beatles produced more of those than anybody else that I'm aware of. But the fucking Beach Boys, man.
I guess I could see
Beach
that.
Boys, the Beach Boys do not get enough credit for how just sort of amazing the shit that they did was.
It's sort of like, wasn't there, there's a... plot point at the end of one of the Dirk Gently novels that related Bach in that.
Oh, way. Right. That Bach was like a gift from aliens.
Yeah, or something.
The aliens were like trying to do this dude a favor. So they like went back in time and produced Bach.
Yeah.
So that he would have something, so that he would be able to hear the amazing shit that he heard on the spaceship again and would be able to talk about it without seeming crazy. I need to read those again.
Yeah,
I don't remember that even a tiny little bit.
I read Dirk Gently and The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul when I was in high school. And then I read them again when I was like 30, and it was like reading an entirely different book.
Really?
And like, I didn't remember any of the stuff that was really like moving to me on a second read.
Huh.
It was like, in between those times, I had heard people say, like, yeah, Dirk Gently books, those are actually better than the Hitchhiker's Guide books. I was like, what the fuck? You're an idiot. I'm not talking to you anymore, asshole. And then after I read them again as an adult, I was like, yeah, okay, I kind of agree with you now.
I'll have to go back and read them again then. I think it may have been since high school that I read them.
No, you absolutely should. And so should you, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it's been... I might have read them even before high school. Well, so, maybe not. I don't know when I got into them.
Sorry about that, Jag. The Beach Boys are so fucking good.
Hmm.
And...
So, well, okay. So if I was going to go experiment, not so much experiment, but based on your recommendation, if I wanted to go now, hear what you're talking about, what Beach Boys album should I download?
Buy Pet Sounds.
Pet Sounds? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure you can get it on iTunes.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, but even, like, Good Vibrations, if you really listen to Good Vibrations, like, the amount of stuff that is going on in that song without it being cluttered or crazy, it's just, it's almost, I know Kevin, when we were in San Francisco, we met your buddy your friend who works at Dolby.
Dolby.
Yeah, your buddy from high school who you hadn't talked to in years, and we had no idea, like, what kind of dude is this? Is this a dude we can hang with? But when he and I bonded over Wesley Willis, that, like, I would trust that dude with my life.
So Wesley Willis and Freddie Got Fingered are your two, like, touchstones.
Yeah, that one guy that was plowing your mom, when he independently brought up Freddie Got Fingered as a thing that was pretty good, I was like, Leilani? You should keep letting this dude plow you.
Even though he's a Scientologist.
Even though he's a Scientologist, yeah. I mean, you know, maybe you'll get some sort of star seed, and who knows? Who knows what happens? I mean, maybe if he plows you enough, you'll never die. Wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you like that for your mom?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's a mixed blessing, right?
You don't know what the higher levels of Scientology bestow upon their most gifted acolytes.
Mm.
So yeah, so I have this theory that the reason that Wesley Willis is so awesome is that him being crazy makes it so he picked up on and understood some just like fundamental thing about rock and roll that when he distilled it into the like just lunatic shit that he recorded, it was resonant in this like just perfect way that nothing that was done with any self-consciousness or real consideration of the process could have ever aspired
okay. to. Okay. So it's like raw elemental rock.
Right. But elemental rock and roll in a way that if you like if you weren't just channeling like your experiences thinking about Batman or whatever into a song like just on a completely like childlike level, you wouldn't be able to pull it off. And I think that for whatever reason, like, I mean, and maybe it's because Brian Wilson is just fucking crazy, right? And I don't know who the crazy one was in the Beatles, right? They might have actually just like had, you know, like an old gypsy woman handed John Lennon this mirror and was like, do not look into this mirror more than 1 hour a year or you will die. And every year he would pull it out and he would look into it for an hour and it would just explain things to him that let him write Beatles songs. And then 1980, 1 hour and 1 minute, Mark David Chapman shows up. Yep. It's like, you didn't listen to the gypsy.
I like that. I'm willing to live in this universe where that's a thing that's true.
Good. Yeah, I don't know what, I guess there was a similar, like, diabetes gypsy that took Wesley Willis out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sugar fairy, if you will.
Brian Wilson's still alive, though.
Oh, yeah?
That's right, yeah. That's probably why Axl Rose got all fat. He also looked into the mirror too long, but it was a slightly different curse.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, somebody's going to kill you because you're not enough like Holden Caulfield. This is just like, oh, you're just going to get fat and everybody on the internet's going to laugh at you. Oh no! That's what Axl Rose said.
You know, did you play the Guns N' Roses pinball at ZapCon?
I didn't. I have heard really good things about it, actually.
It has a ton of magnets in the main area of the field that I didn't notice exactly what sequence of events you have to trigger to get it all to turn on. But once it turns on, the ball is just wildly unpredictable. And the only thing that I can imagine that has to do with Guns N' Roses is that it was just a simulation of all the times when Axl was just drunk off his ass. Because the ball will just, whoo, just
see,
spin
you know
away.
What's reliable? The Slash ramp.
Yeah. Is it?
He drinks and drinks, but he fucking shows up. He shows up every time.
Okay.
He does his job. He never passes out on stage. You know?
True.
Who knows what kind of shape his liver's in, but he's a fucking professional.
And he's got a sweet hat.
Yeah, he does. He's got a sweet haircut. Or that's just part of the hat. You don't know.
Could be.
Yeah. And the gypsy told him, never stop smoking cigarettes. Or you won't be able to play the guitar anymore.
And no, never let anyone see your eyes.
Right. If anyone ever sees your face, you will lose your ability to wail.
So, yeah, Bioshock Infinite. What were we talking about?
The music. The composer, the barbershop quartet singing the Beach Boys
right.
song in Bioshock Infinite, which is one of the greatest moments in any video game ever.
It was pretty good. I was going to say something about the combat. I saw, after I finished it, I went back and read a couple of reviews that I had skipped because I hadn't played it yet. And there were several people who seemed kind of down on the combat because early in the game, they found the combination of weapons and vigors that they thought was just the obvious choice. And ended up just playing through the entire game, not really changing their strategy and just using these same things over and over. And they all felt that was kind of boring as a result. But what I noticed was, and that same thing happened to me. I played pretty much the entire game with the carbine, the sniper rifle, and Possession and Murder of Crows. But all these guys that were saying that, none of them had the same combination of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically how a BioShock game
is. I felt like that's a really good indicator of how nicely balanced it was, that you could easily find the thing that fit to your playstyle the best, and it worked through the entire game, and you were never penalized for playing that way.
I mean, that was true even all the way back in like System Shock, right? Mm-hmm. This is the successor of that genre. Like, there are a bunch of equally viable paths, and you sort of pick one that sort of fits with your stylistic preferences or whatever.
The one thing, I felt more that way about Infinite than I did about the original BioShock, or I barely remember the second one. I installed it again because I found out that you apparently can buy Minerva's Den for PC now. You have to go through some sort of convoluted hoops to buy it from Windows Games for Windows Live or something, but I intend to do that because I've heard really good things about Minerva's Den. But my loadout for the entirety of BioShock Infinite was Possession and the Fire one. And I never really used anything else. And those were the first two figures that it gives you. And so I guess what I sort of wish is that if it's going to give you, if every set of options is viable, I almost wish that it randomized the order in which it gave them to you. Because
it encourages you to spread out by having achievements or trophies or whatever, right? Like,
you know, that doesn't work in Steam because it never really presents you. Steam does not really readily present you with all of the achievements. Right.
Yeah, you have to
like scroll through the thing, which I'm never gonna do because it's always like spoilery.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just don't care about Steam achievements even a little bit.
So when you would get a new power, you wouldn't try it out for a while?
You know, no.
Yeah, no.
Wow, that seems crazy.
Well, because what happened was, well, let's see. When you get them, it tells you what they do.
It gives you those cool
videos. Movie about it. And
but that's for the different than trying it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw them and was like, okay, I could see how that's useful, but
it doesn't seem like a better idea than what I'm already accustomed to. Like, I'm already good at using the one that I started with, so why?
And there are
why bother?
Some...
Like, I'm in this combat situation now. Why should I? I guess the main thing is that the first fight that you ever get into is basically the same as every fight that you get into ever, right? Yeah. There are big bad guys that it throws at you every once in a while, but the very first vigor that you get, just, all right, no matter what big bad guy it throws at you, like, that's takes care of him, right? Like, oh man, it's a guy with a grenade launcher. Whatever, Possession. Yeah. Oh man, it's a sniper.
Possession is so good.
Like, if he can see me, I can see him. If I can see him, he's on my side now until he has his own little unique suicide animation.
Those were
grisly.
I found some of them funnier than I probably ought to have.
When I got the guy with the baseball bat, I was like, oh man, what is this gonna, is he just literally just gonna hit himself in the head with his baseball bat?
Several times.
Yep.
So do they recognize that you are controlling them and then kill themselves to stop?
No, they just go crazy and it's really sad and creepy.
Yeah. When it runs out, they just
Theory. Maybe they thought, oh, people will get this, but then they will be compelled by their conscience not to fucking use it all the time. Because
no.
Jesus Christ.
So I was compelled by my conscience once I had seen the suicide animation for each enemy category. To make sure that I was on the other side of a wall from them when the possession finally wore off.
Oof. Elizabeth will kind of react to some of those animations, too. She recognizes the grisliness.
Also, Far Cry 3 inured me against every gross thing. The only thing that would be gross is if you skinned them.
I felt the extended hand-to-hand kills were maybe a little more gruesome than they needed to be.
Yeah, I never did any. I never took advantage of the, like, finishing move feature because
like
I didn't
seeing
I didn't
the guy's neck break
that.
Was that was maybe a little over the top. I mean, I could see that. I mean, if they're for some reason video games are largely marketed to teenage boys, despite the fact that that's not the largest group that buys them anymore, and therefore outrageousness in that regard is kind of a marketing thing, but. Although I definitely disagree very strongly against the notion that I guess a lot of people were putting forth that the game would have been better with a non-violent kills option, like a tranquilizer dart gun or something. I think that idea, based on the one of the major themes of the story being like violent war and death and how being a part of that messes up a guy's head, I think it would have been absurd to be able to play through the game as a non-lethal run.
From a story perspective, you mean?
Yeah. Like... Well, partly from... mainly I object to it on story grounds just because this is what so much of the game is about. And there's like six... definite story moments that are about people who have been killed, and in four of them you're the guy that killed them. So it doesn't make any sense to me to be able to play through the game as a non-lethal run. But also I don't think it makes any sense from a mechanical standpoint.
Well, Abby, did you play Dishonored yet?
I have not yet played Dishonored.
So Dishonored was every bit as atmospheric. Well, I shouldn't say that. It was not as well executed a world, but it also wasn't. Dishonor took place in an environment that was entirely constructed and less out of just sort of piecemeal taking visually compelling things and interesting sort of like retro concepts from real history than Infinite was. But like, I could imagine a BioShock Infinite that was a Deus Ex style game. And the way in which BioShock Infinite conveys mood through, you know, just poking into corners and stuff would lend itself pretty well to that style of play. It depends on how important you think the main character's story is. Right? Like,
I have to say it's pretty important.
It is, but what difference does it make whether the redemption occurs before or after you kill the 300 dudes that this game makes you kill if you already killed a billion dudes, right?
I mean, it just doesn't make much sense to me to have... Like, in later parts of the game, after the shit really hits the fan and there's people killing each other violently all around you, to be the guy sneaking through with a tranquilizer dart gun. And also, there's some plot moments, and I wish I could say what it was. We want to do this particular show as non-spoiler, but there's a moment that relies on you having killed some guys.
It relies on them having died. It doesn't rely on you having killed them. Right? You could do that exact same thing without you having pulled the trigger. Like, I see what you're saying, but
I think non-lethal kills would cheapen the message of the game, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, here's a question. Why do there need to be enemies at all? Because it sounds like it was awesome before there were enemies.
Well,
Can't you just live in the world?
Do we want to talk about what a game is? I mean, that's the like.
Well, you. I mean, even you were saying like this was super exciting and interesting to explore and do things in, and then you were crestfallen when you started having to shoot dudes, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that it could have sustained that. Like, the point at which it makes you start killing dudes is also the point at which it becomes sort of meaningfully interactive.
Hmm.
Right? Like, literally every system, everything that you do that changes any state, either of the world or of your character, is tied back into the combat. And so there would just be nothing if there wasn't. If there wasn't combat,
it would be a museum.
So this is sort of the problem with Dishonored, right? Like, by playing Dishonored in the non-lethal, like, not wanting to kill anybody way, most of the systems you see, like, oh, this makes your fucking spine ripper 10% more toothy.
How linear is Dishonored?
Not particularly.
Because I feel like...
Well, that depends on what you mean.
Well, I feel like mechanically why non-lethal wouldn't make sense in this game is because in a game like Metal Gear Solid 2 or, I assume, Dishonored, the choice you're making is between killing a guard permanently or killing him for a little while, but he's going to stand back up in a bit, and that is a difficulty increase because you've got less time to deal with what you have to do here, and when you come back through the area again later, he's going to be back.
Well, no, with Dishonored, I mean, you need to just play Dishonored.
I guess
you would really like it.
That's definitely the case with Metal Gear Solid.
You like knock a dude out, and then they're unconscious for the rest of the level.
Okay,
basically, it's.
So how is there any mechanical difference between that and killing him, other than the fact that you get rewarded for having done a non-lethal playthrough?
Well, it's harder because you can't let anybody see you.
Okay.
And you can't let anybody see the body.
Yeah, and this just isn't a stealth game.
Right. But I'm saying... Are there no elements
of stealth?
If you took all of the story section... I mean, this Bioshock Infinite has... these very clear state changes between being in combat and being out of combat. And it is both like mood and systemic because it's like, sorry, Elizabeth can't open this door for you right now because you're in combat.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, oh, Elizabeth is busy, but also Elizabeth is busy. Can't you tell from the music cues?
Oh, man. By the way, one of the things one of the little things I really liked about this game is when you kill the last guy and it does that little music sting.
The little string strike. Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yep. The fact that you get one when you kill the next to last guy, I feel as though we've had this exact conversation before.
Don't think so.
Maybe it wasn't on the podcast.
Yeah.
You get one when you kill the next to last guy. Mm. And you're like, oh, good. Only one guy left. And then I can start poking around in the world again and not have to worry about shooting a bunch of dudes' fucking heads off.
Man, you know else? Funny, this is such a dumb little thing, but I searched a box of caramels and it had a can of beans inside.
Well, that was the kind of caramels that it was. You know? Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know.
There is also a moment where...
Drank a lot of coffee out of garbage cans. That was it.
Yeah. There is a moment where I was really impressed with where... Elizabeth, just in her random wandering arounds, stopped and stood for a while on some stairs, and she actually stood on them properly with like one foot on one step and the next foot on a higher step, and she had her knee up, like actually looking like she was standing on stairs and not a ramp. And I don't know, it looked so good. I wish I'd thought to try and trick her into standing still on stairs somewhere else. So if I could see if that was just a set piece or if it was something that happened contextually.
Every time there was some weird incongruous thing inside another container and Emily was in the room with me, I would turn to Emily and say, Emily, should I eat this apple out of this trash can? Should I eat this candy bar out of the toilet, Emily? And she would always say no, and then I would say, well, there's also some ammo in there, and I only have one option, which is to hit
everything
the key.
Everything or nothing.
Yeah, all right, if you want these bullets, you're also going to have to drink this garbage coffee. Like, oh, well, okay, game. I guess I could use a little increase in salts.
The guy, super great friend that does a lot of Let's Plays that I like, played through the first level, and he seemed to really love just eating everything as soon as he could pick it up. He went into that store that has the little box out in the front of the store for you to put your money in on the honor system. And he's like, oh, honor system, huh? Take, take, take. And then he went behind the counter and found, oh, look, an entire cake. Click. There you go. I just ate an entire cake and the thing it was sitting on.
So that's all you've been playing?
Yeah, that is pretty much it. Let me think. Was there anything else I wanted to mention? Oh, the Schrodinger twins are so awesome. If you enjoyed like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, they're gonna be your favorite characters video game.
That specific thing is very deliberately invoked with the coin flip.
Yeah, the coin flip thing at the beginning. That's also, I feel like, stuff that happens at the end of the game, if you think about that first coin flip scene in context of something,
or if you read a bunch of blog posts about it.
Yeah, or if you read somebody's post about it, yeah, it comes back around to that, which I think is really interesting. I think that's all I had to say.
That's all you have to say about that?
Yeah.
It's a very Forrest Gump.
No.
That's all I have to say about that box of chocolates with a can
with
of beans
a can
in
of
it.
Beans in it.
Did either of you guys play Tuzong?
No, I never did.
Wait.
I have it downloaded.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I did. What the fuck, Riff? You were the one that brought
it
up.
You told us to play it.
I suggested it as a possibility for an assignment, but since we didn't do it
you
as an
suggested
assignment,
it as
I
an
didn't
assignment
get around
without,
to it.
No, without playing it or knowing anything about it?
I saw a video of somebody playing it and it looked kind of interesting.
It's kind of interesting. What's your take, Kevin?
I mean, I spent like 15 minutes playing it and thought it was sort of interesting and hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
But the control over your shots is kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where I could imagine the ability to get better at it. Your shot is like a weird boomerang thing, mm-hmm. but if it hits an enemy, it will ricochet to another enemy, and so it'll often do that 100 times before it comes back to you. So
the guy I was watching enjoyed the surprise of running into new enemies and not knowing what they were going to do.
Yeah.
As the video that he posted, he encountered an enemy that he hadn't seen before, and it stole the bullet from him. And he was incredibly surprised by that. It was kind of interesting.
So you die if you get hit once, and there's no indication of whether there is a goal state or not, and there's no score. So I really did find myself
trying to get further and further into the game.
Right? Yeah, but It seems like the random generation of the levels is such that, like, you know, sometimes level 2 is as hard as level 12 was in the previous game.
Sure.
So what, like, it was a little bit too much randomness and not quite enough structure to bring meaning to the randomness or to bring, like, motivation to it was my take. Like, and it is weird. The idea that I wanted there to be a score just so that there would be some indication of progress. Like, I don't know. I mean, it was interesting, but it wasn't like... A lot of the documentation hinted that there were mechanics left undescribed for you to discover.
Right. I mean, I only got to like level 4 or something. I didn't get very far.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to get overwhelmed in the game by the vast hordes of enemies that will spawn if you don't go through it quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no reason to kill anything except unless it's in between you and a thing that you need to pick up, right? Mm. Like, it's
which happens a lot.
Well, and just to like thin out the herd so they're not as likely to get you while you're
Yeah, but you're better off just finishing the level before the herd gets big.
You have to hit them like 3 or 4 times in general.
There eventually get to be monsters that you have to kill to get past a level.
Right.
Right. It'll just start putting a little tag over the head of a particular enemy and the exit is locked until you kill that guy. And in my experience, it's always the same category of enemy that it makes the boss. Yeah. You play anything else, Kevin?
The only other stuff that I played besides the assignment were a couple of other Twine games that Porpentine had like recommended in an interview.
I bookmarked that Brace game and I was like, oh, I should play this with Kevin. And then I realized, oh, fuck. Kevin's out of town for another month and we can't.
I played it with Melissa.
Oh, actually. Well, I thought maybe I'll play it with Emily.
You should play it with Emily. It's interesting. I would definitely play through it multiple times trying to make different choices because it is not clear on first playthrough what the fuck is going on. Or at least it wasn't to me. It took several playthroughs to sort of understand.
And did you feel like you should do that? You didn't feel like maybe you should just have the experience once and then that was your
version of it? No, I mean, there's multiple ways for it to end. There are definitely significant choice points that change the outcome and the feeling and the sort of tone of it, I guess. Which is worth exploring those. I don't think it's a game where Walking Dead where Jake wants you to play through it once. Well, he doesn't necessarily care if you play through it multiple times.
Jake doesn't particularly care whether you play Brace, this Twine game, by somebody who isn't Jake,
but like,
more than once.
He doesn't. It's not that he wants you to only play through it once. He wants to have done a good enough job where you feel like you don't need to play through it again.
Right, where that the one playthrough you did of it was your playthrough.
Yeah, that's an admirable goal, but like, I don't know that I will ever be his target audience in that sense, because I am so desperate to know what all of the different options are, what could have happened and
stuff. I want so badly for you to play The Walking Dead and just fucking play it once and just try to grow the part of your heart that is willing to accept that kind of experience without mathing it all up.
It's not that I'm mathing it. It's that I want to know. Like,
you want
every
see
time.
All
no,
the
every
angles.
Time I read a Choose Your Own Adventure, my thumb was at every choice
right,
point.
Right, because
and I
you're
would,
mathing it all up. You're not.
How is that mathing?
You're not
that
reading. Is, you're not reading a story. You are optimally traversing a tree.
No. I'm reading every story.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You don't get to read every story, man. You know every choice you make in this life. Every door you open closes a billion other doors, man. And you just got to make your peace with that, man.
The beauty of video games is that usually you can play them multiple times. It's
but
not
the,
like real life.
But the poison of video games is that it convinces you that that's the right thing to do, man.
I mean, I appreciate that, like, Glitch Hiker game that deleted itself, right? Like, there is some beauty to that.
I remember having a dream once where I remembered, if I could just reload a previous save, then my dad would be alive. Why don't I just do that? And then I woke up and I was like, fuck. Also, what is wrong with me? Also, fuck. Because that shit sucks. That shit, I'm kind of serious. I'm making fun of you, but I'm kind of serious. Like, I think that there is some value.
Pac-Man once and died after 30 seconds, you'd be like, well, I guess that's what Pac-Man is.
I guess Pac-Man's dead.
Pac-Man is not a branching narrative experience in that way. Pac-Man,
okay, but it's not a binary distinction. There are a bunch of games that are Like, you could play Bioshock Infinite where the first time you die, the game is over, right? Like, isn't there, like, a 1999 mode or whatever?
There is. It's not quite like that. In 1999 mode, the first time you die...
It just reduces the poly count on all the enemies.
Respawning costs money, and in 1999 mode, it costs $100. And if you don't have $100 when you die, you don't respawn.
So there is a potential for permadeath in that version of the game.
Yeah.
And like, so you could play a game where there was permadeath, and the game isn't really about that, but like, if that's just a feature, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it is a spectrum, I think, of Pac-Man to Walking Dead, and when do you suddenly stop trying to see multiple versions of it?
I don't think it is as much a spectrum as a set of categories of authorial intent. And
why does authorial intent matter?
Because video games of all forms of media are an interaction between the participant and the author.
Well, in every form of media is an interaction between the author and the participant, right?
Like, if a painting
is an interaction between
if
you
there
and
was
painting.
A but if there was a choose your own adventure where in the foreword the author said, please do not keep your fucking thumbs in this thing, please read it once, make the choices that you make, and get the outcome.
Did
that
you finish Braid?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you do it without any spoilers?
Did I finish Braid without any spoilers?
Yes.
No, I spoiled one puzzle.
Okay. So, I mean, that was against authorial intent.
Yeah, and I wish that I hadn't. I wish that I had solved it on my own. But I recognized that I wasn't going to.
Interesting.
And so it was either that or not play it. And do as I say, not as I do.
I'm just curious, where do you draw the line, though, right? Like, because...
I realized that when I talked to other people who had played through The Walking Dead, that I didn't want to know what I had missed.
Will you never go back and replay The Walking Dead the way you would go back and reread Hitchhiker's Guide?
No, I don't think that I will. Hmm. I think that I explicitly will not. Hmm. Like, deliberately, I won't. I was curious...
Even if you played through it a second time making all the same choices, it would mean something different to you 10 years from now. Right?
Yeah, like, maybe.
I don't know, man. Like, my desire to understand the whole of something, like, is a really deep part of who I am, you know? Like, to deny that just to...
Plus, I feel like there's...
I don't know.
I mean, there's stuff that is going to be, like, at some point I want to play Bioshock Infinite again so that I can hear the audio logs and see events and see them knowing what I now know, having that greater context.
Sure.
And you know, I want to go back and let Elizabeth dance on the pier for a few more minutes because... you don't get to see her happy again like that for the rest of the game. But I don't know, I recognize the value of the playthrough of the game having like that being your own playthrough, but I don't think I would want to never go back and experience again. I mean, I have a lot of books that I like to read once every couple of years, you know?
Yeah, I just think that like seeing how something is built does sort of diminish the effect of it.
Hmm.
You know, and sometimes I think that the right thing to do is just, you know, just let this happen the way that it happens. Like, would you feel, Kevin, like you needed to ride the new Star Tours ride at Disneyland however many hundred times it took for you to see all of the possible variations on each section of it
if it were practical, I probably would do that, right? Because it's something that I enjoy.
So it is only by making it impractical that people are able to trick you into experiencing the thing that they actually made for you, as opposed to, like, I mean,
But I'm pretty sure that was not... I believe that that was designed the way it was so that you would go through it again and feel like it was at least partially new, right? Because it would be exciting to go back and see a different content, right? Like
multiple playthroughs.
Yeah,
I guess that maybe that is true, but they don't want a given person to write it 100 times in a row. That is not the person that they're making it for, because that person will start to see the cracks in it. And see, I feel like it sucks for us to be the only people in the world who don't get to play Kingdom of Loathing. Right? Mm. And I don't want to make other people's work into the kind of thing that I don't get to experience because I understand it too well. You know? Like, it's just a, like, what do I want to do with the time that I have? Like, do I want to... Oh, well, there's this thing that I really like. Do I want to just scrape all the veneer off of it so that I can figure out what it's made of and just destroy all the magic? Or do I want to... You know, do I want to just let it wash over me and then remember it and move on to something else? Like
I'm probably not going to go back through Deus Ex and play it to see all the different sort of dialogue options or whatever that you can get if you kill everybody. Like, because there are different dialogue options based on total pacifist, total...
Yeah, whether you save your brother or not.
And yeah,
whether you've been hanging out in the women's restroom or not.
Yeah. Right. And I feel like I've got enough variation on that just from sort of seeing the structure of it. So I'm not saying that I definitely will sit there and play through Walking Dead more than once. It's just I definitely don't feel like that's something that I'm going to commit to in advance, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think it depends on whether I feel like I get to see the structure of things and sort of understand what they're doing. Then maybe the actual content of every surface isn't as sort of important for me. Maybe, I don't know. You know, it seems like, well, okay, we haven't gotten there yet, but like, I feel like I was pretty compelled to go back through Howling Dogs and see what a bunch of the different options were, because some of them have a ton more content than others. You can do it really, really quickly.
No, so did I, because it was so fast, and mm-hmm. and because I was more interested in being able to speak critically about the thing than I was about letting the experience of it wash over me.
Right.
You know. You know, speaking of washing over me, I really, really, really have to pee. And also, Riff told me that my last beer is not actually my last beer.
That's right.
Wow. That's,
I know, I'm going to get another beer.
Another beer exists.
Hey, Kevin, what's in the news in brief?
Let's hear it.
Hurry up.
Just quick, short things. Let's see here. Bethesda is launching some sort of new game, some sort of survival horror game by Shinji Mikami.
I saw a Vine video with some sunflowers catching fire.
Yeah, there's that. There was one with some barbed wire, and then another one of a wall. So that's how they were, like, giving some sort of sneak peek for it. I'm not sure what it's called. There'll be a press conference tomorrow, I think.
Sun barbed wall,
yeah. It's here. Link to the Past sequel has been announced for the 3DS.
Looks pretty good.
I'm dubious.
They put out that little video. The art direction looks pretty nice.
I am both excited and dismayed. I'm actually worried about the art style, because it's that, like, it sort of looks like cartoony more than...
Eh.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Wind Waker was...
And
super cartoony, but I feel like it's one of the best looking ones.
Huh. We might have to agree to disagree on that one. And speaking of the 3DS, it is apparently it's selling better than the DS over that same time frame. Since launch, at this point, the DS had sold 7 million units, and the 3DS has sold 8 million. So
that's encouraging after the 3DS's sort of rocky start.
Well, I guess sales have picked up a bunch, but it's like
the DS had a rocky start too. I mean, and the
did it?
Yeah.
Huh, I don't. I
for a while, there was like nothing to play on the DS. There was like,
yeah,
even when I bought it was like, oh, Metroid Pinball.
Metroid Pinball was pretty good.
Yeah, Metroid Pinball was pretty good, but like,
that's got to be a really tough situation for somebody for a platform.
What to be like rolled up in a ball and getting hammered by giant flippers? Yeah, that
the notion that you're launching a console and then it might be 2 years before. Games that are interesting and exciting come out that people are really excited about buying it. Because that by itself, it just doesn't do anything, right? Like, I wonder if that's why they put so much other sort of gimmicky stuff in there, like 3D photos and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, trying to make the unit itself exciting.
Yep.
I don't know.
What else?
Binding of Isaac has sold 2 million copies over the past 2 years.
Congratulations.
Pretty great.
Man, Emily finally got its hooks into her. Yeah.
And have you seen her since?
You know, Emily, I think this is what happened. Emily got into the Binding of Isaac as soon as Emily and I got a whole bunch of weed.
Okay.
So I think that's what it took. She plays it with the sound off because the music creeps her out.
Creepy. Oh, you can't turn the music off separately?
Maybe that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Huh.
Or maybe she's just so high that she's making her own soundtrack in her head. Yeah, that's probably what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the news.
Oh, well, good. So this assignment, Howling Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I have two things that I want to say about the conversation about Zinesters and what am game. I realized when I was thinking about how I was going to evaluate this game and how that fits into the context of the conversation that's going on now, that it didn't really matter for a couple of reasons. One is that I refuse to accept that Ender's Game is a bad book because Orson Scott Card is like a homophobic asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
it's also badly written, you know, by some metrics, right? So
Ender's Game?
Say that. Yeah, compared to his later writing, like,
well, those value judgments are independent of one another in my head.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite books. I'm not trying.
But what I'm saying is those value judgments are, I am entitled to separate those value judgments if I want to.
Okay,
like somebody who tells me that I shouldn't like Ender's Game because Orson Scott Card is a homophobe is just wrong. And fuck that person. I'm the one who will decide what my criteria are for evaluating a work. And
okay.
I have decided that works are separate from their authors in terms of my evaluation of
them.
So
that's perfectly fair.
Like, if you say, I can't criticize Dysphoria without criticizing Anna Entropy, I will say to you,
okay.
Nope, yeah. I'm sorry, no. You are wrong. And
what if the authors themselves say, I am my games, and therefore you cannot criticize them without criticizing
them? I disagree with them. That's their problem and not mine. In the same way that it would be my problem and not a consumer of one of my products if I got all pissed off about something that they said about it and said, this is a personal attack against me. Like, you know, if I choose to interpret it that way, that's on me. That's where I landed on that. Second thing is, it doesn't matter if it's a video game or not, because I was thinking about this. It would be totally in line with my sensibilities to propose that we all go to Disneyland and ride Pirates of the Caribbean as a video games hot dog assignment. And that's not a fucking game.
Huh.
And yet it is germane to everything that we care about. It has examples of the kinds of things that we evaluate about the works that we discuss. And so it doesn't fucking matter.
Okay. I see what you mean. I can agree with that, I guess. It depends on, are people focusing on the argument about it being a game or not? It depends on the context of that argument, I think.
Well, so like, somebody in our forums in the discussion for this brought up, like, they said something to the effect of, I don't really care whether or not it's a game, but it wasn't any fun, and that's what bothered me. And I posted that just recently, right before we started recording, that I think those two things are related, and that I think the reaction that a lot of people have is they encounter one of these things that is being called a game by the author, and in their head they think, oh, game, I like those because I have fun playing them.
Right.
And when they interact with the thing and it isn't any fun at all.
I'm a girl, and that's what I just want.
Yeah. When it isn't any fun at all for them, they're like, what the fuck? Why did I play this? Or like, why did I interact with this? And then they rail against the fact that it wasn't actually a game because games are fun, right? Mm. I think that might be one of the ways in which just even maybe even like subconsciously people are interacting with these things and feeling like they're being cheated or whatever. And like, I think a lot of these personal games or personal projects or whatever you want to call them, personal zines. They're not meant to be fun. They're meant to be expressive.
I very much don't want to call them zines.
Sure, I'm not trying
that.
To,
I had not heard that.
No,
is
it's
that
the rise of the video game zinesters.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, I don't want zinester to be a word. I knew some people who published zines, and if I called them zinesters, they would have kicked me in the nuts. Yeah. Hey, what's up, zinester? Fuck you, that's what's up. I'm not your friend anymore, you dick. Oh, okay. I guess I deserve that.
There are other games that I think we would call games. I'm thinking Desert Bus, maybe, right? That is, I think we could argue that would be a game, and I think we would also argue that that is not any fucking fun, right?
What I call my working definition for a game is that it has a goal and it has
to get to Vegas,
and it has obstacles in the way of that goal.
You're running off the road.
Okay, sure.
So I mean, Desert Bus
plus extreme boredom, I guess.
My definition of game is something that involves my thumb and gives me an erection.
So,
so what's that nursery rhyme about sticking
pies,
his thumb in a pie,
yeah,
and pulling out a plum? Yep, that's a game. What is giving a thumbs up to a nursing home?
Did you guys read Raf Koster's latest blog post about ludic?
Is there a
nature?
After recently?
After the letter to the letter?
Yes, after the letter,
okay,
to the letter.
No, I didn't read anything after the letter to the letter.
So he posted, he sort of stepped even further back in perspective and talked about, like, I forget exactly what his terminology was. It was like ludic dispositions or whatever, and just talked about how, like, Chutes and Ladders for a kid is a game, right? And then when they sort of grow out of it, it ceases to be a game for them. And so he was very much coming at it from a kind of a subjective point of view, where it was like, if we could approach almost anything with a ludic point of view, right? Like, I was like, staring contests could be a game,
sure,
for me and a friend, right? Like, but it's not actively doing nothing, right?
Did I ever,
like,
tell you guys about the time that I got into a staring contest with a shrimp at an aquarium, and I totally lost because I'm pretty sure they don't have eyelids?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And that fucker stood still for a really, really long time. I think it might have been a dead shrimp.
Was this also at a Red Lobster?
No, it was at the SeaWorld in San Diego.
Oh.
I mean, I think I would disagree with the notion that Chutes and Ladders stops being a game. I think it stops being an interesting game.
Well, I mean, I think the contention.
I mean, is a set of IKEA instructions a game?
Well, it could be, right? You know, I think the argument. I think, and you know, I only read his piece once, and I didn't give it a ton of.
As it should be, you read it once, and you let it make you feel however the author intended for you to feel, and then you don't go back and fucking overanalyze it. You don't go back and make different choices.
That's another thing. The author doesn't get to decide how you feel, right? Like that's part of the...
Sure, throw my own reasoning back in my face.
Anyway, we should actually talk about Howling Dogs instead of just all the like howling controversy surrounding it.
So I smoked a bunch of weed before I played it, and then I interpreted the whole second section as being about cutting off your own dick. And then when I said that to Kevin, he was like, "What?" And I was like, "Ah, fuck. That's what I was afraid of. I was afraid that when I said that, I was finally going to reveal to Kevin that I just never have any fucking idea what I'm talking about and that I am, in fact, just a crazy idiot."
You make an interesting argument for it. I did not see it that way.
Well,
going
back and reading the initial sentence of that segment again, I think
which
that it's
segment was
not
it?
About the cutting off your own dick segment.
could you give
The segment that is with you and a lover potentially.
Oh, where you kill them at the end?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That guy is your
the
dick.
The second segment.
The second section.
But also, but by that reasoning, though, Zach. From your arguments, the noose is also your dick. So you're strangling your dick with your own dick.
No, you're strangling your dick with something, a different dick.
that was where, for me...
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And the thing is, I played it twice, and I was like, I'm not crazy. This is about cutting off a dick.
So,
and then I said something to you about it, and then you were like, no, it's not. Me and Emily Short both think you're an idiot. Why are you... And I was like, well, I have been... you know, to a man who only has a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And to a guy whose recent literary focus has been interactive novels about dick severing.
Here's a question. Do you think that you would have gotten to that interpretation... if you did not have any knowledge of who the author was?
Probably, I don't know. I probably don't know. That is an excellent question.
Right? Because I feel like that becomes a much more potentially relevant stance if you have knowledge of like where the author's coming from.
So I, in looking at the text, I don't think that that is a crazy interpretation of that section. I think it is something that is maybe suggested but not actually followed through on.
I believe that is what I sort of come to believe as well, because there are some sentences which don't make any sense.
It only makes sense if the chord is a dick.
Yeah.
I guess I'm gonna have to go play it again.
No, I had to too. When Zach brought this up, I was like, "What?" And I went back through, and I was like, "Okay, it doesn't really fit like 100%, but I can see how he got there."
That if that's the way you start looking at it, everything else more or less fits that.
And so the reason, you know, I brought up Emily Short because Emily Short did an interview with Porpentine about. Just, you know, Howling Dogs and interactive fiction and Twine and stuff in general. And Emily Short brought up the interpretation of that scene as, like, killing an abusive lover. And I felt like, when I read the interview, I felt like Porpentine evaded that interpretation entirely.
Yeah, so did I. Like, it was certainly not confirmed in the interview. But then I thought, having read Porpentine's blog and Twitter feed, I really want to stop reading things that this person writes, because
I deliberately did not read any of her blog or statements or anything, because I wanted to experience this thing on its own terms.
There is a level of whimsy present there that I am uncomfortable with.
It's interesting, right? Because this is a piece with a bunch of relatively serious imagery, I would say.
That's so... Except for the one.
I think it's the fourth section.
So
maybe?
I think the second one is cutting off your own dick. The third one is Joan of Arc, and then the fourth one is just fucking crazy Warhammer.
Yes,
shit.
The Warhammer 40K sequence was so amazing and so hilarious to me. I would pay real money and time to play an entire like regular form parser based IF game based in that world. I thought it was amazing. but the question I have is whether it was intentionally hilarious.
I didn't think it was funny. I thought, I don't know.
You didn't think the idea of taking some fingers back for your bone sparrow to nibble on.
No, I thought that was actually kind of creepy and not.
It was definitely presented in context as something that you might be uncomfortable with.
It was presented as something that they thought I should be uncomfortable with, but I thought was hilarious.
Huh. I liked the experience of playing this way more than I expected to. But like, so when the Cart Life guy was like, oh man, I'm going to give up my booth for Howling Dogs, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be as fun as Cart Life. Which is to say,
oh my.
Like, I really hope that I can figure out how to make a peanut butter dog. But luckily, I didn't have to, because all you do is click nutrient tube, and then it's right. It feeds you a peanut butter dog. And I was like, see, how fucking hard was that, Richard Hoffmeyer?
the first time I played through, I didn't encounter the breaking down of the environment.
Oh, yeah?
I just serendipitously or whatever, I just stopped trying to throw shit away or take a shower.
Huh. I did it every time day. Because it was my, reward.
I did it, I didn't take a shower after the first time because it didn't seem important. But then it starts telling you that your skin feels itchy, right. And it was like, oh, I guess I do need to take a shower. And that was when I discovered the shower was broken.
I did every optional thing because it was the only means of expression that I had. Like I knew that what the man wanted me to do was to eat and drink so that I could, you know, get my reward that it was doling out. But like, fuck the man. I'm going to do the things that I want to do. I'm going to clean up after myself and I'm going to take a shower, because those were framed as rewards. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do that every time. And then that's where it starts to illustrate the decay of the environment.
I wish it didn't feel like it had an ending. It just sort of stopped. And I was like, oh, is it over?
Well, there's two different
and I wish there had been ways I wish there to... had been some more information or just some kind of
did you get the
closure,
slightly more positive ending?
Did you find the sniper rifle?
I don't know. I only played through it once, so
it would be a lot easier to remove your dick.
I'm guessing you did not, because that the likelihood of finding it if you weren't sort of backtracking and trying a bunch of different links, the likelihood of finding the hidden ending is
low.
Is almost
it predicated on choosing to go to the party dressed as a hungry stone instead of Batman?
No.
I was also
there.
Batman.
There are two in those two pages of just 50 links.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
There
was it
one
hidden
link
in there? Okay.
On each of those that is slightly out of place. And if you select those two, it takes you to an alternative.
What do you mean when you say out of place?
I was able to, the first time I played through, I identified both of them. I was like, that seems weird. Why is that word highlighted? both on both pages. So like, I feel like
I didn't
there was
read
some kind of clue. Them. There was some sort of cue.
I clicked a bunch of them and they all said, that's interesting.
I moused right, over exactly. them.
So
I
over stopped
them to see that they all pointed to the same Twine node. And then once I realized that that's what it was, I was like, okay, this page is not meant to be read.
Yeah.
And
that was
I didn't
my
read
take
it.
On it basically. Yeah. Huh.
Okay. So that is, if there is something considered a puzzle in the game, that is,
that's great.
Hmm.
I'm happy that there was something there for me to miss.
Yeah. I mean, I exhaustively, cause my browser just said JavaScript, you know, thing, so it didn't actually tell me what the nodes were, so I clicked on every single one of them just to make sure that there wasn't something additionally hidden.
I was bummed. I wanted to know what the hell a throat dancer is.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting. Now I want to know even more.
So that alternative sort of ending does give you a little bit more of a sense of like what the fuck is going on.
Okay.
Kind of. But not really.
Hmm.
So the interview with Emily Short had a couple of like contextual discussions, which I think for me gave me a sense of like what
is the Orpentine thing that you kept texting me?
The, what was it? What the I write things for witches, crystal girls and dead people.
Yeah. I didn't read the interview carefully enough to know what the fuck you were talking about when you
so
kept saying
part,
that.
There is a part in the interview where, like, Porpenine's saying, you know, like, I don't really care if most people don't get this. I write for witches, crystal girls, and dead people. Anybody else that reads this, like, that plays my games and gets anything out of them is just icing.
See, that is that whimsy that...
It's got a dual nature, right? It's half whimsy and half serious, right? Like, there is a way in which Porpentine self-identifies as a witch slash crystal girl or whatever, right? Like that is, I think that is, she writes for herself in a way, and, like, people respond to it. There are, you know, she has a following of people who play these games and have, like, intense emotional reactions to at least portions of them. You know, and I really enjoyed reading through this.
Yeah,
right?
No,
like,
me
I
too.
Thought it was...
Me too. I...
Speaking of which, the XYZZYs are open for voting for the finals, and this is up for a couple of categories if people are interested in going
it
and
is,
looking
God,
at that.
Jenny texted me about it because she is very afraid that Howling Dogs is going to beat Counterfeit Monkey for best game. And I...
Huh.
As much as I think that Emily Short would be just super dignified and graceful and happy to lose to that, I, as an agent of the patriarchy, do not want that to happen. And so
I would say that I enjoyed Counterfeit Monkey and also felt that it was like deeper and had a lot more going on.
Well, it was 1,000 times as much work to produce.
Sure.
Which sure. is...
It was a four-year project and Howling Dogs was a week
right.
project.
Yeah, so. Well, that was why I was... That was
there's
why I just said it was 1,000 times.
There's some debate going on in the, apparently, the XYZZY community about whether or not Twine games should be in the same categories
so
Parser
I've been like,
IF.
That crazy busy this past week, like trying to get a bunch of deadline work for, you know, KOL and Word Realms done or whatever, but I took a couple hours off and I implemented Pong and Twine.
Is it like graphical with a period or is it just descriptions of
text but graphical, yeah.
Okay.
With a dot. But I started something that I like because there, you know, there's this whole discussion about like what is a game, like what does it mean to be a game, that kind of thing. And I was like, I kind of feel like I have something to say here. And so I sat down and just downloaded Twine and just started writing a sort of piece or whatever. And as part of that, I implemented Pong in a couple different ways. And I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm going to finish it.
Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Jesus, do it.
Okay. All right. Okay.
God.
But like,
that is
because I've got so much other shit going on.
This is
the worst possible time for me to be spending stuff on alternative.
That is seriously the purest expression of you that I have ever encountered in anything that anybody, you or anybody else, has ever done. And if you just sit on that, I'll be real sad.
Okay.
Finish it. I'll pay you. You can clock in for those hours. Finish that.
All right. Okay. It's not a very high-res poem.
No, not. But because you also understand math, right? So the higher res it is, the larger the problem space becomes.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're just typing all this manually.
Well, I'm cutting and pasting some shit.
All right. This podcast is a crazy sneak preview of an earth-shattering indie game shaking scene release. I fucking love the IF community, but like sitting around arguing about whether or not people writing interactive stories in Twine counts as IF really seems like the deck chairs on the Titanic.
I don't think they're arguing that it shouldn't be counted as IF. I think they're arguing about whether it's fair for a Twine game in which all the writing you have to do is the narrative
it's not a parser.
A long form parser game to be up against that in the writing category, because the writing in a parser game is an order of magnitude more difficult and onerous.
Sure, but I also think that is,
that's a choice, I guess.
That's like, that's a real dick move, I guess, is what I'm saying. To suggest otherwise is a real dick move.
You think so?
Yeah. It is ascribing a level of importance to those awards that if you feel that it is that important, you probably shouldn't win any awards for anything.
Huh.
Is where I would put that.
Well, is it because the community is so small that you're feeling like that, or like what?
No, it is because the community is so irrelevant that I feel that way. I say that as part of an extremely limited audience for modern IF games, but like you don't get to be exclusive when you are a dying breed. Like it's just,
I don't know that it's fair to say that they're a dying breed. Yeah,
absolutely
just
a dying
breed.
Man, I went onto Google Groups the other day because what I went to Rec Arts in Fiction because I was looking for some thoughtful discussion of Howling Dogs, and what I found was that there have been 5 posts in the last couple months in Rec Arts in Fiction. Like,
I think they generally moved to somewhere else.
Okay,
but
that's probably
true.
I
would argue that Twine,
and I
has lowered the barrier to entry to people making games. That there are,
I don't think they're arguing
thousands
on
of games being
right.
made, and I understand they're not parser games,
right? Which is great,
but it's only going to be, but potentially that is going to open up their eyes to the fact.
I absolutely
that
agree with you.
I think I don't. They're not. They're not suggesting that Twine games be excluded from the awards. They're suggesting that it be. That Twine,
separate
yeah, that
category.
That best writing in a Twine game and best writing in a parser IF be two different categories, because they're not at all the same beast.
Yeah, it's that, man. Like, there is so much going on in Counterfeit Monkey. There's so much good stuff, and some of it is so deeply buried. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
It would be super sad.
Sure, but I mean, there's more going on in some novels than in other novels, you know?
Right, and some of them win Pulitzers, and some of them win...
Okay, so I mean, I guess it's fine for there to be Pulitzers and, you know, New York Times bestseller platinum balls or whatever. You just get a bunch of money, I guess? Not really. Not really a bunch of money. I remember talking to
Maddox, the best page in the universe. And he wrote a New York Times best-selling book. And he was like, I made like $5,000. And I was like, that sucks.
It does not, apparently does not take a lot of sales to become a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
It's like... on the
order like you can thousands, you can easily be on the New York Times bestseller list for a while and not make back even a modest advance.
Yeah.
So I liked Howling Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot more than I thought.
Except
was
for the part
to.
Where it made me cut off my own dick.
Were you acting out each of the sections?
Yeah, if you get home and your room is filled with bones, it's because of that fourth section.
Yeah.
So I had to put them somewhere. This was interesting to me. So in that interview with Emily Short, Porpentine says that the section that she would most like to have like expanded and sort of play with or whatever is the section where you're sort of managing the empire as the princess or whatever. Mm. Which to me seemed a lot like, I don't know, Fable 3. That's like, I watched Melissa play that, and that seemed like a thing where people come to you with problems, and you like decide between two equally sort of bad choices what you're going to do, but they have an impact on your empire or whatever.
That was
and like,
oh, go on.
But I mean, it was just like the tiniest hint of this sort of interesting sort of empire management kind of choose your own adventure style game that I was like, oh yeah, that could be really interesting. You could definitely do a lot with that. But it was very minorly exploring Howling Dogs.
I mean, I think it is certainly safer to insinuate a cool thing than to try to deliver a cool thing. Right. So, yeah. I don't know what my point is there, but I don't know that an entire game that took place in the Coffin Bombs world would actually be as good as the suggestion of this world that you've already been exposed to.
Maybe. If the level of, I don't know, interestingness of the text and world building could be continued.
I just don't know that you could keep that up. I mean, you know, inform. Do it. Make it yourself.
I wouldn't feel right taking someone else's world that way.
Do it, though. You say, like, hey, check it out. Check it out, Porpentine. I took your shit and I made a real game. What do you think about that?
I'm going to make Pong with with a skull and two, sepulchral bunks.
Yeah. All right, so the next assignment.
What is our next assignment?
We decided, because none of us have ever played Yoshi's Island, that we're going to play Yoshi's Island.
Yeah. Available on Super Nintendo and Game Boy Advance. Yes.
I don't know that you can actually buy it. Riff and I have it because we're ambassadors.
Well, I guess you can.
I'm dressed as a bat.
If you have a previous DS or Game Boy Advance, I bet you could get the cartridge for cheap.
Ah, the GBA.
Yeah, on the NES. It was Super Mario.
We could just call
World
a spade a spade and say you're going to download the fucking
Island
ROM
or something
and play it. If you are one of the three Video Games Hot Dog listeners who actually makes a point of playing the assignments, you know what?
More than three. There's probably.
You know what I will say about Howling Dogs? Prompted the most discussion in the forums of any assignment.
A bunch of people played it who did not care for it at all, but because they felt that, like, because we were talking about it, they played it. Like, there might be a bunch of people who don't actually participate in the forums that, like, check out the assignment.
I am going to say there are nine.
You know, for the thousands and thousands of people who download this podcast, it's possible that we have no idea who does what.
It is right. Possible that we have no idea who does what. Fair enough. So we're gonna play Yoshi's Island, and it's I've heard really good things about it.
Yeah, it's a platformer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
Oh, man. What are you going to do next year when all of the Kickstarter games that we've been backing come out and they are all procedurally generated pixel art platformers?
Oh, yeah. You should. People should totally go on Steam and vote for
Rogue Legacy. Yeah. The don't shit your pants, guys. Seriously, this is as if I had a wet dream that resulted in a video game on a wall. The Don't Shit Your Pants guys have made a procedurally generated pixel art fantasy platformer where you, a randomly generated dude with a sword, kill giant fucking floating skulls and dodge fireballs.
And when you die, your dyslexic son takes over for you.
Yeah, every once in a while it will spawn you colorblind and you play the game in black and white, apparently, according to the video.
Or incontinent, or... Yeah. I am super excited about that. That sounds super great. Super great.
How many people made Don't Shit Your Pants? Because that seemed like one guy could make that game, but then...
I don't know.
But then there's some prolificness... Moving forward,
mm-hmm.
right? What's the name of that company? Is it like
Cellar Door?
It's not like Bill Smith Soft or something where you're like, oh, that was made by one guy, Bill Smith.
It is a Toronto.
So it was made by Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
Okay.
They do not talk about who they are.
It was made by Toronto.
It's probably a small handful of people.
Because that's all that will fit in Toronto.
Hmm.
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember how to stop doing a podcast, Kevin.
Well, if we're not going to do any listener mail,
I don't have any.
I will tell people how to contact us in the listener mail segment that we never do.
Didn't we do one last week?
I think we did.
We ever do a listener mail segment?
We practically never do.
We definitely always do.
Next week, our assignment for episode 100 is Yoshi's Island. That's weird. You should Twitter us with your questions at VG Hot Dog.
Or your comments about Howling Dogs and how the second part is all about cutting off your own dick.
Sure, sure. You should email us, vghotdog@gmail.com.
Here's the thing. Get high before you play it and open your heart.
You should come join us on our forums. We're sorry about the sign-up process, but you're smarter than it is, so you'll figure it out. And you can find a link to them from videogameshotdog.com. Yeah, so there's that.
Is that everything? That's how we end the podcast?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Guys, I've had fun recording episode number 99 of Video Games Hot Dog with you.
I agree.
And I hope to see you next week for, I was going to say, a very special episode of Video Games Hot Dog. It's not going to be any different than any of the other episodes of Video Games Hot Dog because we constantly forget each other's anniversaries.
We could get some of those little party noisemakers.
No, I remembered Roy's birthday. The reason that I asked you if it was Roy's birthday was Riff asked me what the date was, and I said, it's April 18th. Wait a minute. April 18th is somebody's birthday. So then I texted you, and I said, is April 18th Roy's birthday? And you said, yes. And then I texted Roy and said, happy birthday. And he said, thanks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I left him a present on his desk before I left. Oh. So that he would have something.
Well, he didn't come to work because it's his birthday. Well, I thought he was just being a lazy Mexican. But in fact, he's having a cumpleaños.
Hmm.
Feliz Navidad.
I think his 37 cumpleaños. All right. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Have a great week, everyone.